It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Thank you for joining me here at another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis right here at 77 WABC and around the world at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. Thank you to the listeners. Our show is consistently in the top 10 in New York AM radio, according to Nielsen, and we thank you for that honor and your commitment by letting us provide you with great business content week in and week out. Tonight's show is actually a rather interesting show. A couple of weeks ago, there was the very unfortunate incident of a Southwest Airlines flight, Flight 1380, that taken off from LaGuardia and had to make an emergency landing at Pennsylvania's Philadelphia International Airport. There was unfortunate loss of life. There was one fatality, which is, of course, terrible and unfortunate. Yet at the same time, the pilot had successfully landed the jet and thankfully had 150 survivors to that very harrowing incident. And therefore, we're going to talk with two experts on actually people that have flown pilots. One of them is Captain Paul Eschenfelder, who flew for many years with Delta. And we're also going to interview another pilot Patrick Smith, who flew for many years and actually has a very popular blog called Ask the Pilot. And therefore, we're going to be talking with each one in order to get their perspective on crisis management, how to handle pressure, and to get perspective on what actually happened and how Southwest handled the actual event. I also want to give a shout-out and a thank-you to the Wall Street Journal column on Wednesday, April 25th, by Scott McCartney, The Minutes After Disaster Struck, How Southwest Airlines Management Put Its Emergency Response Plan Into Action After the Disaster on Flight 1380. And actually, Southwest had a great plan in place and executed it perfectly under the circumstances. So we're going to discuss that as well. Our giveaway this week is going to be the book by Sheldon Zerdin, The Wall Street Hall of Fame. It's going to go to one lucky listener. All you have to do is text over MYB to 64600. MYB to 64600. And one lucky listener is going to win this book. Good luck. My guest now is none other than Captain Paul Eschenfelder. You're joining me here on Mind Your Business, 77 WABC. A little bit of background about Captain Paul Eschenfelder is a retired Delta captain. He's been doing this for quite some time and actually was an advisor to the government of Canada and Colombia and actually had worked on, unfortunately, had the experience of being a former accident investigator and actually had an experience while flying an A320 with an engine blowing up during during a takeoff from Orlando. And the reason why we wanted to get someone of the captain's experience is because of the recent incident that happened with flight 1380 of Southwest, where unfortunately there was a fatality. Yet the bright side was that the captain actually had stabilized the aircraft after an engine had exploded, and nearly 150 people were saved. And that's why we wanted to talk with someone with the experience of Captain Eschenfelder on how, what goes on in the cockpit on a regular flight, and certainly if, God forbid, there is an emergency. So, Captain, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Get struck. It's my pleasure.
Well, thank you. By the way, around 2 years ago, we had the honor of having Captain Sully Sullenberger on the show. Yeah, and he recounted and discussed that flight that saved everyone by landing in the Hudson with both of his engines going out. So, let's just open it up. Talk about your life experience before we get into any specific questions.
Oh, yeah, Chuck, I'm quite old, so that makes me well experienced. I was able to fly all over the world and saw a lot of interesting things and met a lot of interesting people. And I got to see the sausage being made, Jets Chuck. I Concomitant with my aviation career in the airline industry, I also worked as a air safety advocate in Washington on a number of committees and other rules being written and so forth. So I saw how that was done and the amount of compromise that's required and what the end product is. And so that's what we'll be talking about a bit today.
Yes. So moving directly to the Flight 1380 of Southwest, certainly as from your experience and from your experience as an investigator, perhaps you could share what was it like, you know, if you were, you know, and thank God you weren't, but if you were in the cockpit and the captain of that flight.
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about what happened first so everybody will have the background of what was going on. This was a Southwest Boeing 737 going from New York to Dallas. And on a climb out of New York, passing about 32,000 feet, the left engine came apart. Well, they say it exploded, but it didn't really explode, but it darn sure came apart. Part of the parts punctured the fuselage, specifically a window at row 14, which depressurized the airplane. You know, there's a big difference in the pressurization between the inside of the airplane and the outside of the airplane, over 8 inches per square inch. So when that happened, of course, all the air goes rushing out of the airplane, so the airplane depressurized, the mask dropped because you can't breathe up at that altitude, and the crew had to do an emergency descent to lower altitude down to 10,000 feet so everybody could breathe while at the same time dealing with this engine failure. Then they had to divert to Philadelphia, which was the nearest and best alternate for them to land at. And they made naturally a single-engine approach because they'd shut the left engine down, but they also decided to do a reduced flap landing because they were worried that some of the debris, the engine parts that had come apart, might have damaged their flight controls. So they landed at quite a bit higher speed, which takes a lot more runway. So they were doing a single-engine approach with a reduced flap landing in there. So they were quite busy, and fortunately everything came out okay.
Hmm. You know, it brings to mind when we interviewed Captain Sullenberger, one of the questions was about the short runway length at LaGuardia. Out of curiosity, would they have attempted to land, you know, the jet back at LaGuardia, or would they have had to have gone to, like, a JFK?
Oh, you're talking about Southwest 1380 now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because once you mentioned about how much runway spent, how much, you know, the length that they needed to land.
Well, they were quite a bit, they were down over Pennsylvania, so going back to LaGuardia would not have been a good choice. They would look for a large airport, and Philadelphia was close by, and by the time they could make a descent, they were practically there. So it was a good choice, and they've got a long runway at Philadelphia, so that worked out.
Right. But in terms of runway space, you know, just from your experience, have you actually been in and out of LaGuardia Field?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. All kinds of airplanes.
It's challenging,
what you might say.
Right. I mean, I know as a passenger, you know, how many times, even if landing in a rainstorm, and by the time the jet turns, it's like you see the Grand Central Parkway, like, kind of right out your window.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, you're usually using most of the runway there.
Yeah. So going back to Southwest Flight 1380, once the incident happened, explain what it's like. That you did mention about the depressurization and the fact that a person cannot breathe, and of course the masks come down. And the passengers recounted how the plane dropped rather quickly, which was a fright to them. But of course, the people in the cockpit understood that that was critical. Could you, you know, give some perspective on that?
Well, we have the masks in the cabin for depressurization like that, but they're only going to generate a limited amount of oxygen. You can't go all day on those things. And you have to get down to around 10,000 feet where everybody will be comfortable breathing. So what we're going to do at that case is keep the airplane under control. And here we see that there was apparently an uncommanded roll to 41 degrees to the left, which would have been quite exciting. And that would have dropped you quite a bit in altitude. But then they would have taken steps to make a rapid descent once they have the airplane stabilized while they're shutting down the engine to lower altitude. The crew would put their masks on. They'd probably reduce the power and push the nose over, so they're coming down fairly rapidly. But if you're worried about some airframe damage, you don't want to come down real fast because you don't want to tear the airplane apart by too much in the way of air loads. And that, if we take a look at the picture of that left engine, we can see how the cowling was torn off of it, and the air loads probably ripped some of the engine cowling back also.
Hmm. Now, in terms of Southwest, in terms of management, if I could just touch on that for a minute, because I read an article this week in the Wall Street Journal about called The Minutes After Disaster Struck. And it referred to the it actually complimented. It talked about the great job that Southwest did by from a management perspective on handling the crisis. Perhaps you could give some perspective on that.
Well, we actually had three different places where we did crisis management. One was in the cockpit, one was on the ground, and the other one was in the executive suite. And what we saw going on in the cockpit was really an iteration of all the training the crew has had over the years that they're required to be given by the regulators and that the corporate training department gives them, and they have to go through their paces every year. So they know what they're going to do. Now, I have to say, if this crew was getting, for instance, their annual check ride and they had all these things happen, the check pilot was giving them in the simulator an engine failure at altitude, an emergency descent, damaged airplane, a reduced flap landing, a single engine approach, they would probably throw rocks at him afterwards because that would be considered a challenging environment. And after all, that never happens, yet here it was. So they're well trained in the cockpit because they have to be for all these things that happen. When they get on the ground, you'll notice that Philadelphia Airport was well trained also. They were right out there with the crash crew and the people, tow bars and trucks and so forth, to handle the emergency on the ground because they're required to have a plan in place. If there is an emergency and they have different degrees of emergency, and they're required to practice and drill with their emergency plan. The Southwest Executive Suite, of course, I can't see into the Executive Suite. All I can see is the press reports of what happened after that. But they're also required to have a plan in place when they have some nature of emergency at the airline with one of their aircraft. In other words, we're going to swing into our emergency procedure, and this department's going to do this, and this one's going to do that, and this is going to do the other thing. But the interesting thing about it was we saw the president of the airline seize the microphone and come forward almost immediately and start talking to the press because he realizes, you know, the press is going to print something. They might as well print what he has to say as opposed to rumors or what somebody else says. And he instantly was out there talking to people, telling them what happened, what he knew. And it wasn't very long after that that they addressed some customer service issues for the people that had been on the airplane. For instance, they gave them, what, $5,000 cash to defray their expenses and a $1,000 flight voucher to get them home or something like that. So he was trying to generate goodwill among his customers, too, that had gone through a big fright.
My guest is none other than Captain Paul Eschenfelder, who has many years' experience in being in the cockpit, actually a retired pilot at this point. He's also a noted lecturer on the subject and an aviation expert. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group, marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Is your business owed money? Are you frustrated with trying to recover past due funds and worried you may not get paid? At Ginny Debt Collection, we know dealing with debt collection can be a stressful endeavor. That's why we're here to ease your collection headaches and maximize returns. With more than 15 years serving clients nationwide, Ginny Debt Collection's comprehensive hands-on services help your business efficiently recover past due funds, improve cash flow, and develop strong customer relationships. Call us at 917-400-3253. Gain peace of mind knowing experienced collection professionals are helping you get your money back into your account in the shortest amount of time. Call 917-400-3253 for a free consultation. Let our team of attentive collection specialists recover your money for you so you can focus on growing your business. To get back your hard-earned money, call 917-400-3253. 917-400-3253. Or visit GinnyDebtCollection.com. That's G-I-N-I DebtCollection.com.
So recently, a healthy couple in their mid-50s came into Alitra Health for their longevity exam. They were not expecting particularly to find anything wrong on the assessment, but the exam showed otherwise.
Dr. Avi Nemitz is medical director at Alitra Health's Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity.
So they go through a very complete evaluation, blood work, scanning of the coronary arteries, stress tests, evaluation by nutritionists and exercise physiologists. We sit down at the end of the day, and his whole world changed in that moment.
Alitra Health provides a full, in-depth, comprehensive longevity exam to detect problems before they occur.
Without an intervention, he was going to have an active cardiac problem. So I told him, look, you're going to be fine. He left with a lot of confidence, knowing exactly what he was supposed to do. We understood what he had, and now he's going to be able to deal with it.
Why spend time worrying when Alitra Health in Manhattan can provide you with a complete snapshot of your health today? Visit AlitraHealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A Health.com. Alitra Center for Life and Longevity. Because nothing matters if you don't have your health.
And we're back. Mind Your Business on 77 WABC. My guest is Captain Paul Eschenfelder, a retired captain, but an aviation expert. And he flew for Delta for many, many years. Actually had an incident, which we'll get to in Orlando during takeoff, which we'll get to soon. But before we do, Captain, perhaps you could share any other perspective before we move past this incident, the incident at Southwest Airlines Flight 1380, perhaps having to do with the aircraft or the people in the cockpit. Any other perspective you wish to share?
Well, this incident where the engine literally came apart is very rare. It just doesn't happen. These are CFM 56 engines are very reliable. I flew them for a number of years. Yes, I did have one literally blow up, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But what happened here on this engine was one of the fan blades, and the fan is that front section of the engine. When you're looking at it, you see all those blades on there. There are 24 blades. One of those had some sort of metal fatigue in it that is not visible to the naked eye. It can only be deduced by doing an ultrasound on the blade. It had a crack in it, and this blade came apart during flight. Well, you know, that engine's twirling around out there at, 14,000 RPM or something, so you throw off a piece of metal at that speed inside that engine, and it just, this was not a what they called a classic uncontained failure, because normally for an uncontained failure, we think of the shrapnel going out the side of the engine, and this didn't happen. What happened is it was ejected something from the front of the engine, which meant there was probably a big boom when this happened, a compressor stall, we call it, or a surge, mm-hmm. and it blew literally the cowling off the front of the engine. That's why the engine looks so torn up in the front. Mm-hmm. And the cowling was blown off, and once you no longer have that aerodynamic shape, then you're subject to all those air loads of the air going by, and it just ripped the rest of the cowling off. Some of it went back and penetrated the fuselage, knocked out that window. Now, the passenger windows are double pane, so they're fairly sturdy too, so it must have been a very large piece of debris that went by, and you notice it didn't happen in the field where the fan blades are forward. It was back in row 14. So this was debris flying by the airplane that hit that window. caused the airplane to depressurize, and that's what caused the fatality for one of the passengers, who literally, when everything is getting sucked out of the airplane, the passenger was partly sucked out of the airplane too, and it wasn't until the pressure equalized and other passengers were able to drag her back in that they were able to bring her back in, which is why that was a fatality. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the dynamics of what happened. Why did that happen? Well, I got to tell you, you know, when I say it's very rare, it's not as rare as we would hope, because in 2016, Southwest had an identical event where they had an engine come apart on a flight from New Orleans to Florida. Almost exactly the same thing. After that, everybody sat up and took notice, and CFM issued a notice to all their users that you need to inspect your high cycle engines more often. Well, Southwest has a lot of high cycle engines because they do a lot of short hops, so they do a lot of takeoff and landings. When they sent this out, the U.S. regulator, the FAA, sent around a proposal for an airworthiness directive, saying that they were thinking about telling everybody they've got to inspect the engines more often. Well, the industry in the U.S. pushed back really hard on this, specifically Southwest. They said, hey, this is going to cost us a lot of money, and it's going to take a long time. You're saying we have to do this in 12 months. We can't possibly get this done within less than 18 months. And the reason for this is, although they track engines, they do not track the individual fan blades. And then the fan blades can be removed from this engine and can be repaired if the blade's damaged. And they put another blade on that engine and send it on its way while they're repairing this one in the shop. So this blade goes out and it winds up on this engine over here. So they don't have a good way to track these blades. And as a result, the only way to inspect all the blades is to inspect all the engines. And this was kind of... Southwest didn't want to do it, American didn't want to do it, United didn't want to do it, and so forth, because it was going to be fairly expensive. And now, after we've had the second incident and a fatality, the FAA, after waiting for a year, has finally issued this airworthiness directive and said, go ahead and do it. Mm. And, of course, all the carriers are doing it now, and Southwest is saying they're going to be able to complete their inspections within 30 days.
Wow.
So that's the story on 1380 and how we got to this situation. Now, the CFM56 engine that I had on Airbus 320 that blew up, literally blew up, but it was the other end of the engine. This was the fan blade, which is right on the front of the engine that sucks all the air in. I had a turbine wheel failure, and the turbine is on the rear of the engine. That's in the hot section after the air goes through the compressor and then goes in the hot section. Fuel is mixed with it, it burns, and then it's ejected over the turbine wheel in the back to give it thrust and also turn the turbine wheels. During the takeoff roll, we were riding along there at about 120, 130 knots, and I heard something kind of going boom, boom, boom behind me, and I thought, yeah, that doesn't sound real good.
Right.
And there was a Southwest jet, the whole short line behind us, who had a ringside seat to this, and he got quite excited because he could see everything that was going on. There was fire coming out the tailpipe. We were throwing engine parts down the runway and all kinds of things going on.
Ooh.
He got pretty excited about the whole thing, but up in the cockpit, we had no indications at all. And I just decided that this doesn't sound good. We're going to stop. And the nice thing about these modern jet aircraft is they do a lot of thinking for you. So when you close the throttles, you get maximum auto braking instantly. And boy, I tell you, it'll water your eyes. It's like landing on the ship again, man. I mean, you stop. You're hanging in the straps. So we stopped right away. And and it shows just exactly how well-trained and what a plan that the Orlando airport had, because the fire department got there right away. I said, how'd you guys get here so fast? And
right.
They said, listen, we were standing on the ramp at the firehouse, and we heard the engine go. It was over a mile away, and they heard the thing blow up. So they manned up their trucks and just waited for them to be told which runway to go to. And we looked up a few minutes later, and everybody realized we weren't going to be able to taxi. When you do a high-speed stop like that, the brakes get very hot, and then we have what we call fuse plugs in the brakes that melt, and they'll release the air in the tires to keep the tires from exploding.
Right.
So we had flat tires. So the next thing I knew, I looked up, and here come a bunch of city buses to bus the passengers to the terminal, and right behind them came a portable air stair, and they brought the air stair right up the airplane, took all the passengers off, trucked them right on back to the terminal. It was extremely well done by the Orlando Airport Authority. It was very impressive. But in that case, I went and looked at the turbine wheel on the back, and it was just all chewed up. They promised me they were going to let me know what caused that and what they were going to do about it in the future. But as usual, I never found out anything. These things don't get discussed a whole lot in public, you might imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But thank God you're around to talk about it.
Yes, I say that every day.
Yeah, because it sounds like if you were either too far too far down the runway where you really didn't have a space to land, or just took off. I mean, you know, who knows what, right? .. You know, thank God you're around to talk about it.
Well, fortunate for us is that the airplanes are designed to handle that kind of thing, and the crews are drilled to handle that type of thing. If we had lifted off, we would have had to shut the engine down, and it would have been a real busy period, but we would have been more than able to come back around on single engine and land safely. I feel fortunate. And we're fortunate that we're at Orlando with 10,000 feet of runway instead of LaGuardia with one of those short runways landing in the bay.
Yeah. Yeah, which has happened, unfortunately. Another interesting question I've always wanted to ask a pilot: what is the most challenging part of being a pilot? Is it the takeoff? Is it the landing? Is it by altitude? I'm just so curious.
Well, for me, it got to be jet lag. Quite frankly, no kidding. We did a lot of east-west flying. Worldwide across the Atlantic and the Pacific, and your body just gets so far out of sync that, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you're wide awake staring at the ceiling at 2 a.m. and your stomach's going, where am I? So and the all-night flights after you've done three or four crossings, it's pretty challenging.
As we approach the close of this segment, and again, this is really special to talk with someone with your level of experience and knowledge in aviation. Primarily, the listenership of this show is small business owners, executives, etc. Perhaps you could share from your experience of being in the cockpit and understanding real pressure coming at you at 500-600 miles an hour. What could you share with the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, it's important to be able to discern the difference between what is a hazard and what is risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can discern hazards. We know, well, an engine blowing up, that's obviously a hazard. But what is the likelihood of that happening? That's the risk. So we've got to be able to measure the risk of our hazards. And then we've got to be able to act when we discern that. We have to say, okay, that is a hazard. And in this case, we identified the hazard early in 2016. We said, well, we've got a fatigue problem with the blades on this engine. And CFM said, the risk looks a little elevated. Let's do something about it. And then we did not address it rapidly at that point. And we waited to a second event occurred, and unfortunately this one had a fatality, before we really got busy and started doing something about it. So we have to be able to say, okay, if this is a hazard, what is the risk, and then be realistic in our view toward risk. And once we have determined what the risk is and what the problem is, we have to maintain our focus on it and make sure that we put the mitigation in place, because if we don't, these things are like to reoccur. And, you know, aviation is probably 13 times safer than driving down the freeway. But when we have a lot of iterations, thousands of flights a day, even if you have only a small percentage which have a problem, those problems are going to reoccur. So we have to address them. We have to maintain our focus on problem solving.
Captain, what a treat. What an honor. Thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
That's the pleasure was mine.
So special. Folks, before we go to a commercial break, I would like to let the listeners know that our giveaway this week, we always have great giveaways here, is the book The Wall Street Hall of Fame, Great Personalities in the History of Business by Sheldon Zerden, a listener of this program. Thank you, Sheldon, for sending in this book. Really interesting read. It goes back around for the past 200 years very famous business personalities. The book is going to go to one lucky listener. All you have to do is text in MYB to 64600 for a chance to win the book, The Wall Street Hall of Fame. Again, text over MYB to 64600 for a chance to win the book by Sheldon Zerdin, The Wall Street Hall of Fame. Good luck.
Hi, Shep Hyken, your customer service and experience expert, and this is my latest book, Be Amazing or Go Home. Now, it says 7 customer service habits that create confidence with everyone, not just your customers, but the people you work with, and even the people at home who you love, who you hang out with, your family members, your best friends. These are habits about building relationships and creating confidence. And while it says 7, there's actually 35 habits broken into 7 categories. Really good habits like amazing people show up ready to amaze, which means you don't just show up on time, you show up maybe even a little bit ahead, prepared, totally head in the game. That really recognizing that great service when you take care of other people is not an accident, it's a habit that you've practiced over and over again. So I want you to think about it. This is the book, Be Amazing or Go Home.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
Okay, so you're considering a comprehensive medical exam, but you haven't decided where. At Elytra Health in New York City, we know you have a tight schedule and that you only want the best. We also know you have choices to consider. Well, consider that you could have a world-class executive longevity exam at Elytra's state-of-the-art Manhattan Center for Life and Longevity, right in downtown New York City. Think about the fact that the experts at Elytra Health are a hand-selected staff with more than 30 years of experience in executive exams and concierge medicine, and that top doctors in the area refer their patients to Elytra. Something else to weigh is that cardiac imaging, cancer screening, labs, and all other testing is completed in a single 5-hour visit with white glove service. Plus, you'll receive the results, advice, and follow-up coordination before you leave. Finally, consider how easy it is to get peace of mind from an Elytra exam now by visiting ElytraHealth.com. That's E-L-I-T-R-A Health.com. Elytra Health. Well, above all.
Yes, thank you for joining me here on this tonight's edition of Mind Your Business here on 77 WABC. Now my guest is none other than the, do we start with blogger or captain? Well, he is Captain Patrick Smith, and he is the, he actually runs the very, very popular blogging site, Ask the Pilot. Time Magazine had it listed as one of the top 25 blogging sites, pretty cool, in the U.S., Captain Patrick Smith, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thanks for having me on. It's actually First Officer Patrick Smith, but that's neither here nor there.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out. Perhaps you can even explain for our audience before we get to the subject matter, what is the difference between a captain and a first officer?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up because mm-hmm. this speaks to one of my pet peeves in the way the media covers aviation incidents. They always speak of the pilot mm-hmm. as if there's only one pilot when there are always at least two pilots on every commercial jet. There's the captain and the first officer. Mm-hmm. And the first officer isn't an apprentice. It's not he or she is not a helper pilot, there along for the ride. Both pilots are fully qualified, full-fledged pilots who can operate the aircraft in all regimes of flight. Both perform takeoffs and landings and are equally qualified. The captain is ultimately in charge and has a bigger paycheck to go with that. but both are pilots.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. We had the honor back in 2015 on this program of having Captain Sully Sullenberger. He was a past guest on this program. And he talked about working alongside his first officer, Jeff Skiles, and you're certainly now giving perspective to that conversation. Fascinating.
Yeah, after the Sully incident where they landed in the Hudson, you know, the role of the first officer, Mr. Skiles, was really downplayed. And I think Captain Sullenberger, you know, did a good job in reminding people that he wasn't the only person there. And right. Skiles was actually at the controls when the incident happened. So there's that. I think that's important for people to realize, because over and over again, when something goes wrong or there's a story in the media about an incident or an accident, we always hear of the pilot, as if there's only one person there.
Now, perhaps you can give some perspective. You are have been a first officer for quite some time. Describe what it was like from when you jumped into the industry and some of your, some incidents that come to mind from your experience as being in the cockpit.
Well, just to give you a little bio, I guess, I came up through civilian ranks. I was not in the military. I began flying commercially in 1990 for a small regional carrier, and I've worked for regional carriers, cargo companies, major airlines now. I've flown cargo jets, passenger jets, long haul, short haul, a pretty good mix. And somewhere in there, I started writing, started blogging. I'd always had kind of a latent interest, I guess, in writing, but never really thought about trying to use it as a kind of part-time vocation, but that's what it became. I started blogging using the Ask the Pilot name in 2002, and the brand, if you will, has been running strong since then.
That's amazing. So now, if we can, you actually had I want to focus on a blog post that actually went up, and it was updated just yesterday on Thursday, April 26th, about the Southwest Flight 1380. Certainly everyone listening to the show has heard about that flight. It took off from LaGuardia roughly 2 weeks ago, was on its way to Dallas Love Field, and had a very unfortunate engine explosion, if you will, when it was approaching cruising altitude. Fortunately, the plane landed safely in Philadelphia. Unfortunately, one passenger, Jennifer Reardon, was struck by the debris and passed away. Yet at the same time, nearly 150 people survived, which, of course, is the very bright side of that incident. Perhaps you could shed some light from your experience of being in the cockpit. What went on?
Well, let's start by putting this accident in some context. A person was killed. That's tragic. Yeah. That's highly unfortunate. But as you noted, over 100 people survived. And this was the first fatality involving a U.S. major carrier since 2005. And meanwhile, there hasn't been a large-scale crash involving a major U.S. airline since 2001. I mean, we're talking 18 years without a major air disaster, at least involving a mainline carrier. You know, your Deltas, Americas, United, JetBlue, Southwest. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's absolutely astonishing, because when you go back and you look at the 1960s and the 70s and the 80s, we would have multiple large-scale disasters every year. I mean, that was normal. That was expected. And I think it was 1985 in particular, the year that stands out. Globally, there were, I think the number is 27 large-scale air disasters, hundreds of fatalities each, 27 in 1 year. That just doesn't happen anymore. What we've done is engineered away, I guess, what used to be the most common causes of air disasters. And now, you know, we have these, you know, once in a while sort of minor incidents. I shouldn't call it a minor incident when somebody's killed, but in the context, it really is. And you need to look at it that way, because we're so much safer now than we used to be. The unfortunate death of the woman on the plane notwithstanding.
Right. My guest this evening is none other than First Officer Patrick Smith. He runs besides being in the cockpit and running flights, also has a very popular blog, Ask the Pilot. And this evening we're talking about the challenges that face, you know, captains and first officers in the cockpit and the pressures that they deal with and how they handle it so deftly. And most passengers never realize actually what goes on and the pressures that they face. And that's what we're talking about here this evening. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hey, Joe, give me a minute. I'm going to run the numbers and circle back next week. Post it on Facebook, LinkedIn. Just get it up there.
You're great at what you do, and you're busier than ever. We get that. Imagine if you could devote every minute of your day to running your business and taking it to the next level. Enter Bottom Line Marketing Group. Bottom Line Marketing Group focuses on making your company look great so you can focus on growing your business. To see some award-winning projects produced by Bottom Line Marketing Group, visit www.bottomlinemg.com. That's www.bottomlinemg.com. Or call CEO Yitzhak Saflis on his direct line for a free consultation at 718-412-3505. That's 718-412-3505. Bottom Line Marketing Group. Marketing solutions to grow your bottom line.
Is your business owed money? Are you frustrated with trying to recover past due funds and worried you may not get paid? At Ginny Debt Collection, we know dealing with debt collection can be a stressful endeavor. That's why we're here to ease your collection headaches and maximize returns. With more than 15 years serving clients nationwide, Ginny Debt Collection's comprehensive hands-on services help your business efficiently recover past due funds, improve cash flow, and develop strong customer relationships. Call us at 917-400-3253. Gain peace of mind knowing experienced collection professionals are helping you get your money back into your account in the shortest amount of time. Call 917-400-3253 for a free consultation. Let our team of attentive collection specialists recover your money for you so you can focus on growing your business. To get back your hard-earned money, call 917-400-3253. 917-400-3253. Or visit GinnyDebtCollection.com. That's G-I-N-I DebtCollection.com.
Missed an episode of Mind Your Business? We've got you covered. Check out our YouTube channel, Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, to hear interviews with business executives and thought leaders whenever and wherever you want. That's Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis.
And we're back. Mind Your Business here on 77 WABC and around the world at mybradio.com, mybradio.com. My guest right now is First Officer Patrick Smith, who is a First Officer, and he described earlier on in, during the segment, the difference between a a captain and a First Officer. By the way, are both referred to as a pilot?
Absolutely.
So yep. Both are referred to as a pilot.
Fully qualified pilots. Wow. We have essentially the same ratings and certification.
Wow. And he also writes, I don't know how he has the time, but somehow has the time to write. Since 2002, a very popular blog, Ask the Pilot. And therefore, we really thank Patrick for taking the time out to join me here. I'm on your business. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know where I find the time either, but luckily airline schedules can be flexible. We can swap and drop and change our schedules around and free up a lot of time. That's one of the great perks of the job.
Wow. Well, the main reason why we wanted to have you on the show is because of the recent incident that happened with Southwest Airlines Flight 1380. On one hand, there was a tragic component to it that there was a loss of life. One person had unfortunately and tragically passed away by being hit with debris from the engine that failed. There were 7 injuries. On the flip side, nearly 150 people survived on an incident that horrifically could have gone much worse than it did. And therefore, that's why I wanted to talk to a pilot. We know that on that plane, Tammy Jo Schulz was the pilot, and she, thankfully, had guided it back to Philadelphia for an emergency landing and saved so many people. But from your experience being in the cockpit, perhaps you could describe what is it like for a pilot to be in that type of situation?
Well, a great question, and the media loves a hero, and much has been made about the captain's performance during this emergency. There's no mistaking it. I mean, the crew had its hands full. Everybody on the plane, the pilots and the cabin crew, the flight attendants, were very busy. This was a crisis. But that said, you know, they did what they were expected and trained to do. And I don't want to downplay this too much, but the what to do and how to do it really would have been pretty straightforward. When you look at it, they were dealing with a compound emergency. They had three things going on at once. They had an uncontained engine failure where the engine came apart. They had a cabin depressurization where pieces went through the sidewall, through the window, and the cabin depressurized, requiring an urgent descent. And they also had passengers seriously injured. Now, those three things together made for a busy situation, but there was really nothing seat of the pants about it, really no heroics, to use the word that everybody wants to use. They did, like I just said, what they were trained to do and what they were expected to do, and the plane was never really in any danger of crashing. And for a lot of people, that's hard to believe because you've seen the pictures and the photos online of people with the masks strapped to their heads. And for those on the plane, sure, they would have been frightened. I understand that. Now let's look at the depressurization. You know, that's a dramatic thing. The masks come down. There's a lot of noise. The cabin is emptying of air and oxygen, and the crew will begin an emergency descent down to a safe breathing altitude. That's sort of dramatic, but it's also well within the capabilities of the plane and the crew. It's not all that difficult. You throw in the engine failure, and it's more difficult. Yes, this was absolutely challenging, but it was nothing they weren't trained for.
Now, first of all, is there a risk in such an incident that additional parts could have, let's say the engine could have even come apart, additional parts coming off that engine, or perhaps the wing coming off, or because the window was open and the pressure from the, from everything going on the outside of a jet that's so high up, that additional parts of the plane could be ripped apart?
No, not really. I think that the situation stabilized pretty quickly within a matter of seconds after the engine came apart and the cabin depressurized. I mean, I suppose there was the danger of pieces of the engine coming off further and maybe striking the wing or the horizontal stabilizer in the back, but that would be unlikely.
Is there any discussion about how Southwest handled the whole incident? I mean, I read a very good article just the other day in Wall Street Journal called The Minutes After Disaster Struck. And they certainly, it seems that from a marketing standpoint, they really were prepared for and handled such a situation quite well. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I was away when the incident happened. I was in Asia. I was actually in the Himalayas, so I didn't follow it all too quickly in the immediate mm-hmm. aftermath. But after I was home and was researching things, you know, I got a sense that they did handle it really well, perhaps better than other carriers would have handled it. And that's Southwest. They've always had a little bit of a touchy-feely aspect to their customer service that's above and beyond what some of the other airlines have. Although I like to think that's changing and that airlines in general are becoming better communicators and learning how to deal with these situations more appropriately. Hmm. We go back to the United incident,
right.
I guess that was last year now, where,
yeah.
you know, things were pretty bollocked up and presumably they've learned from that.
Yeah, in fact, one of the lines that they had, I mean, now I'm pivoting, but one of the lines that has to do with marketing and perception is that in the Wall Street Journal article was that as soon as the accident happened, I'm going to read this sentence over here, the airline also quickly pulled advertising from social media, meaning mm-hmm. They have this down to a science that, you know, God forbid there is a tragedy, there is a disaster on whatever level, They have this all charted out and how to deal with it. So, and therefore, that my question is, how important is it for whether it's someone who flies a plane or a company, to kind of have drills and think through even, you know, God forbid, the unimaginable and a disaster, but to be prepared for such a, I don't want to say eventuality, it shouldn't happen, but for such a prospect.
Well, crews obviously are well-trained in that respect. Meanwhile, all airlines have crisis teams that spring into action when things like this happen. I mean, the details are handled better by some airlines than others, but all airlines have those teams and have those plans in waiting should something happen.
Perhaps you could even share. I mean, you know, it's not often we get to speak to a pilot. Again, we did have the honor of speaking with Captain Sully Sullenberger a while back, and he was very gracious and shared. And he really recounted the entire incident and life lessons that he took from it. Perhaps you could share some incidents from your storied career.
Well, everybody wants to hear a horror story or about a near miss. You know, nothing jumps out at me. In fact, I have to go all the way back to when I was a private pilot, when I was 19 years old and flying a four-seater.
Okay.
And was involved in a little bit of a near miss over Nantucket Sound, you know, flying in visual conditions in this little plane, you know, completely different world from the commercial airline realm. I have to go all the way back to that to come up with something scary, knock on wood. And I think that right there underscores how unusual these situations are and how safe commercial aviation really is. That said, in the simulator, every 9 months or so when I go back for my recurrent training, you know, every minute is kind of a disaster, a simulated disaster. But, you know, importantly, that's what we do to stay sharp and be prepared for when these things happen.
You know, an interesting question is, you know, I'm sure everyone in the audience, you know, flies from time to time. How important is it for a pilot from your vantage point, to communicate what's going on minute to minute? Now, we know, I flew a couple of weeks ago, and the pilot comes on when we're approaching a certain altitude, and even if there's a delay, like we're coming into New York, as you well know, right, you know, the congestion between LaGuardia and Newark and JFK and the circling patterns and all that. How important is it to communicate with the passengers?
You know, that's a great question, and it's something I've written about, you know, airline communications and crew communications. You know, there are basic guidelines in an airline's manual about how to communicate with passengers, what to say, what not to say, how to say it. But really, in practice, it comes down to the individual and how good a communicator that pilot or that flight attendant or that gate agent is. And let's face it, some are better than others, and you know, there's a lot of contempt out there for airlines, a lot of mistrust, and I think that's partly because not all airline employees are good at explaining things because they don't want to scare people or they don't know the right language to use. You know, I try in those situations. I try to avoid jargon. I try to talk to people conversationally, give them an idea of what's really going on without confusing them or scaring them or sounding like I'm just making stuff up.
Right. you know, if I may, just before we go to my final question, on your blog, you do talk about terminal madness and what is airport security and the whole thing. Perhaps you could just share your perspective on that.
I can't because we don't have the 3.5 hours that it would take to talk about it. I mean, airport security is such a giant subject, and it's such a dysfunctional state of affairs. You know, even this long after 9/11, we still haven't got it straightened out. But that's a topic for another day.
Fair enough. But my final question to you, Officer and Pilot Patrick Smith, is primarily the listenership of this show is small business owners, executives of businesses, etc. From your vantage point of being a pilot, so many different type of aircraft and dealing with real pressures, what could you share with the listeners of Mind Your Business?
Well, let me answer that this way. Everybody knows that flying sucks. The indignities of flying are duly noted, but it's also important, I think, to realize that flying is much, much safer than it used to be. It's much, much cheaper than it used to be, even when you factor in all of those fees that everybody hates. And in a lot of ways, and this is going to sound ridiculous to some people, it's more comfortable. I mean, first class and business class on the big carriers now are amazing experiences with the lie flat seats and video and all the food and wine and economy. Now you've got Wi-Fi and then on-demand video screens and so on. These are things that didn't used to exist. Sure, there's a little less legroom, and airports are more crowded, airplanes are more cramped, but there is some good to the experience, and I encourage people to step back and try to appreciate that if you can.
Thank you, Pilot Patrick Smith, First Officer, and explain to us the difference between a captain and a first officer. Thank you for that. In case you're just tuning in, no worries, you'll be able to pick up this entire episode by Tuesday morning. Pilot Patrick Smith, thank you so much for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on anytime.
As we wrap up this edition of Mind Your Business here on 77 WABC, I must give a thank you to our first guest, Captain Paul Eschenfelder, who gave a fascinating perspective on, in a very technical way, on what happened on Southwest Flight 1380. And then our second guest, First Officer Patrick Smith, and who has a very popular blog, Ask the Pilot, who also gave his perspective on what happened with Southwest Flight 1380. I want to thank you for joining me again for a great edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night for another edition of Mind Your Business right here on 77 WABC.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Safliff. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Safliff has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.